think I've introduced myself to a couple of you already. Feel free if you want to move closer to be part of the conversation. It looks like there's plenty of room. If you're comfortable where you're at, I understand that as well. I think for the purpose of this meeting is being recorded tonight, so to capture any questions and dialogue we may have about the individual policies, I think it's best to approach the podium and speak from there so it can be recorded. I am the accreditation manager for the police department, and part of this process tonight is to allow public comment and dialogue and just conversation about changes that are going on at the police department and with our policies, and provide a little basis for why changes to the policies are being made so that you have a better understanding, and also to allow you all an opportunity to review them yourself before the meeting and come forward with any questions, concerns, or anything that you would like us to consider before these are finalized and made official into policy through the city manager's office. So, as in past meetings, I do not like to I don't want this to be a me read the policy word for word, but I do want this to be a good open dialogue and back and forth conversation if you do have questions or concerns. Most of the basis for our policy revisions are related to CALEA, which is the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies. It's a national accreditation that we are in the process of trying to achieve. We are in the self-assessment phase, and the large part of that phase is us taking a good internal look at our policies, procedures, equipment, facilities, and basically how we do business. And we match them to the standards that are provided to us by CALEA. And where we find deficiencies, it's our job, my main job, to make sure that we do whatever is needed to bring us into compliance with those standards. This is a good opportunity for us as a police department and as a city to show the members of our community and our citizens that we are open to a voluntary process to have outsiders look inside at us, to be critical of us and show us where we can improve to become the best police department we can be and up to best practices. So that's kind of a, in a nutshell, what CALEA and accreditation is all about. This is supposed to be an outward sign to boast and boost confidence in from our community and our police department. So with that said, the first one, I'll go in numerical order. The first policy we're going to cover tonight is policy 206, and this is regarding our all hazard plan or critical incident response manual. Before I start into that, did anybody have any questions about anything related to CALEA? No? Okay, very good. Revisions were made to this policy. Basically, as you can see up here at the very top, we are working on the CALEA 6th edition, and all these numbers here at the top are individual standards. So I went through the CALEA standards, looked at our current policy to make sure that they were up to the standards, and also to go ahead and identify where at in the policy it is covering an individual standard. Now, what is not part of this policy is the actual all-hazard plan itself. It is a multi-page document. I want to say it's almost 50 pages in length. But for tactical reasons, it's not a document that we're going to share publicly because it basically spells out to anybody in the community exactly how we're going to operate and respond to various natural or man-made disasters. So, does anybody in your previous review of this policy coming in tonight have any questions about what you see in the first two pages of this policy? No? Okay. Some of the major changes, and I wouldn't really call them major, is we used to have just a hard copy version of the all-hazard plan, and it was located in a watch commander's office. So with Power DMS is our document management system. That's what we're actually looking at here. This is Power DMS. This is something that our officers have access to at any computer in the building. They have access to it in the computers in their car. They have access to it on our cell phones. It's web-based, so as long as you have login credentials, you can access any of our policies, even on your mobile device. So it made sense to take that hard copy document and put it into an electronic version and actually nest it into the policy that deals with all hazard plans, so you don't have to go multiple places to find this information. So that was one of the major changes to the policy. And then the actual all hazard plan itself required a little bit of updating to be up to the CLIA standards, but again, the document we had been working off previously was pretty much in line with the best practices. If there aren't any questions on that policy, I'll go ahead and move on to the next one. Next one is policy 332, and this is our missing persons policy. This is one that hadn't received any revisions since 2014 when this policy manual came out. Again, up here, you can see there's two CLIA standards that deal specifically with missing persons and missing juveniles. Go to the, here's the actual example of CLIA standard 41.2.5 dealing with missing persons, and it basically says that we have a written directive that provides procedures for reporting and investigating adult missing persons, which include at a minimum, and then we need to meet all these bullet points in the standard. So I went through the policy, updated it to the standard, also included the sections that meet the standards. The other policy or the other standard that relates to it is 41.2.6 regarding missing children. And again, we have the standard statement and then the bullet points that all need to be met. So now our policy meets all the bullet points of both standards. And it also, we had two separate policies on this. One was basically how to conduct a missing person investigation. And then we had a separate standalone policy on alert systems. Are you all familiar with like an Amber Alert or a Silver Alert, Silver Advisory? Okay. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. Pardon me? We do not have a green alert on here. Pardon me?
Yeah.
Yes, it's not a part of this policy. But we did not, go ahead. Yeah, quite honestly, it's going to be something I'm going to have to look into. I'm not familiar with it, so I would have to look into that. But a missing veteran would fall right under missing person. Do they have a separate alert system? Okay. Right. I'll write a note to look into that. Okay. Thank you for bringing that forward. So anyway, I didn't see any need for a standalone policy for something that was closely and directly related to the missing person. So we added that policy, just combined the two material under one policy heading. Any questions or concerns about our policy 332 other than what you've mentioned? Okay. Yes, sir. Policy 332 and policy 334. 334, I think, was our alert system, and I merged that into 332. You're welcome. Okay, the next one up is policy 500. And this is our traffic enforcement function and responsibility policy. It as well has several CLIA standards that it hits. Now, this is a policy that has received recent revisions, as recent as March of this year. So this policy in itself was pretty solid with the CLIA standards. What was changed, largely due to the circumstances of the COVID-19 pandemic, we had a special order that we produced earlier in the year to deal with a lot of situations regarding the COVID-19 pandemic, and part of them related to this policy regarding traffic stops. And I added, this section was added, during times of a pandemic disease outbreak or other circumstance where exposure between police and members of the public should be limited for health and safety concerns, the chief of police or designee may limit traffic stops to only those involving hazardous moving violations. One exception to this would be when an officer has articulable facts that a person is a danger to the community, they can be stopped for reasonable suspicion other than a hazardous moving violation. So, this was actually information that went out to all officers in a special order, but we thought it important enough to go ahead and add it into this policy should it be needed in the future. Another thing that we added is we took away verbal warnings. Chief Jones felt that it prudent that any traffic stop that a Columbia police officer makes on a motorist involving either a non-moving violation or a moving violation should be documented in some way, shape, or form. So the easiest way to do that is to require either a written warning or a citation. And we did away with the verbal warnings. So that section was added. Those are the two major changes to this policy this time around. As a good measure, I asked our traffic unit supervisor, Sergeant Curtis Perkins, to go ahead and review this policy in its entirety for like an annual review. And he provided some feedback, and I made those changes as well. Let's see if I can find them here. In cases where a description of the driver dealing with traffic citations and notice to appear, in cases where a description of the driver is not available or is not willing to go to court, the officer should send a careless and imprudent CNI notification. So I added this section right here, or is not willing to go to court, to that, and changed this may to a should. For us in the police department, should is different than a shall. Shall is a you must. Should is basically a you must unless you have a really good reason not to. So it's a little more stronger language than a may. And for you, if you're not aware, a CNI driving letter is a method that we have to communicate with a motorist or maybe the owner of a driver if we are not able to identify 100% who a driver is. Say you notice somebody on the way in driving in a careless manner and you got their driver's license information. You could call that into the police department, and we may not be able to locate that vehicle, but what we could do is run the registration and find out who the registered owner is. A lot of times parents will have a new driver driving their vehicle, and it gives us an opportunity to reach out to them in an official capacity and say, hey, your vehicle was observed driving in this manner, and more for informational purposes. He also wanted some changes to do with our radar detection. We use, for speed measuring devices, we use radar, but also we have been for quite some time using LIDAR, which is a laser technology. And some of this language in here was specific to radar units. And we added some language that also encompassed and included LIDAR systems as well. I think that's about it. Anybody have any? Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're forgetting the protocol of coming up to the podium. Thank you, Brittany, for pointing that out.
Hello.
Hello, Alex.
Okay, I've got a couple questions. Going back to section 500.4.2, I just was curious, what holes did adding the "or is not willing to go to court" patch up?
Give me 1 second to read the entire paragraph here. Okay, so basically in circumstances where we did not observe the violation, but we are acting on the complaint of another person, if you were the person that came to me and said, I observed this individual driving in a certain way and it was a traffic violation, for us to write that person a citation, we have to be able to identify them, and we have to be able to rely on you as a witness in court. If you are unwilling to be a witness, we can't go forward with prosecution.
So the "or is not willing to go to court" refers to the calling complainant?
The complainant, yes.
Okay.
It refers to the witness.
Okay. Mike?
Would it be more clear if we put in "or the witness is not willing to go to court"?
Yes, I think it would be more clear. I was confused about that.
Yeah, no, I do see what you're saying.
Yeah, and it might, honestly, like I like that it's added there, but it might be, this is just like the copy editor in me, it might be even better to add it in the preceding sentence, because I thought that was implicit in the "and must be willing to appear in court as a witness," but I think making it more clear in the sentence where the red marks are, I think would be beneficial. I think I'm going to rescind what I said about adding it to the preceding sentence because it doesn't relate to the C&I yet.
Yeah, as I'm reading this and reading the sentence prior to it, I think it makes sense as is.
Yeah.
Tony, do you have any? Okay. No, that's okay, and I apologize for putting you on the spot.
If I can briefly elaborate, for me, I'm getting confused in cases where a description of the driver is not available or is not willing. It almost is vague enough to where it could be read as the driver isn't willing to go to court on the spot, so they can be issued the C&I. I just think it's a little unclear.
Okay, what would be your suggestion to fix this? To make it more clear to you.
Okay, so in cases where a description of the driver is not available, or if the driver is not available, or if the complainant is not willing to go to court. Yeah, I think that's the only thing off the top of my head. Just adding if complainant or if the complainant is not willing.
Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
If you have something to say on the same thing, I'd be happy to stand back.
Can you come up, please, sir?
I'm sorry, I'm really cute.
Hello, that's kind of cool. My name's Kevin. I pick up trash all around the city to try to help keep the place clean. And I just wanted all y'all in Columbia to know that I love you and I appreciate you. And maybe misunderstood, but I want the best for everybody. And I want everybody safe and happy, and wish best blessings on everybody. And can we turn those two lights on outside that are out there? Because they look really pretty. And that's really, really what I wanted to say, was maybe if we could turn those star lights on, because they're out there and they should be shining.
Okay.
That's all.
I don't know that I have any control over that, but look.
If you could, because I don't know who to talk to about it. I was looking at them. I was going to plug them in for you, but something. But I don't want to waste electricity. If I have to, I'll pay for the electricity, but I just want the stars.
That's
out
okay.
There.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Got another thing just to add.
Okay.
About the laser devices, section 500.5.3, subsection D. Earlier, I think in subsection B of the same section, the radar device must be verified at the beginning and the end. For the laser device, it says the accuracy of the equipment according to the manufacturer should basically be checked at before taking enforcement action and then at the end of the shift. I was wondering why the difference between those two subsections, one happening at the beginning of the shift, but the other happening prior to taking enforcement action. I was wondering if it would be easier to have both just be at the beginning of the shift, because it kind of, like, not saying that this would happen, but it could leave open the option to do it maybe after their shift starts, but sometimes crime can't be predicted and they might have to do something right away. And I can already see an attorney cross-examining in municipal court saying, like, did you check it prior to this happening? No, why not? Well, this happened and I had to make sure the safe, you know. And I just think it might be easier on everyone if it was just checked at the beginning. I also don't know what goes into checking it, so it could be time consuming and not worth the time, but just one thought I had.
Okay, and I will, I'll ask Sergeant Perkins about that.
Mm-hmm.
I personally have never used a LIDAR, mm-hmm. the laser technology,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not familiar with why he wanted the language
mm-hmm.
that way,
mm-hmm.
but I will check with him to see if there isn't a reason if we can't make it more consistent.
Sure, sure, sure.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you.
Welcome, thank you. Thank you, Tony.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's not.
Hey, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Yes,
I'm with Channel 8. They were telling me the live stream hasn't been started yet.
The live stream is actually malfunctioning.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
And welcome, by the way.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have questions or concerns about Policy 500? Next is policy 612. This is a brand new policy that's being proposed. This came out originally as a recommendation from the company. We received this policy manual from back in, I think it was 2012, as an addition regarding Brady material disclosure. This is a topic that is very important to police work and very important for our officers to understand and do correctly. Basically, Brady material is any information known or possessed by the Columbia Police Department by officers during an investigation that is both favorable and material to the current prosecution or defense of a criminal defendant. So basically, in very simple terms, we have a responsibility as police officers when we are investigating an incident or a crime to report all information, not just information that is beneficial to the prosecution, but also any information or evidence that might be exculpatory as well. We have a duty and responsibility to do that. So this policy, which is just barely 2 pages long, explains to our officers their the responsibility in doing so. So is there any questions regarding this new proposed policy? Okay. Next one up is also a brand new policy. Alex, did you have a question?
It's not really a question, more so just a concern. On the city calendar website, I tried it opening it on multiple different browsers, specifically this one. It just showed up as like a blank page, and then the second page just had one line. I don't know if did anyone else have an issue with that if they tried opening it? But yeah, just wanted to share that.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, policy 614 is also a brand new policy. Really a standard regarding this says that we will have a written directive that addresses receiving or collecting and the sharing of criminal intelligence information with appropriate entities to include bullets A through E. This is something we did not have a specific policy on, so to meet this standard, I asked our lieutenant at the police department who's responsible for this type of activity to go ahead and draft a policy to meet this standard. So now we have policy 614, which meets the written directive requirement and also all the bullet points. Really nothing to compare here because we did not have anything prior to this. Did anybody in your review of it have any questions regarding this policy?
Hi again. I'm just kind of curious what the purpose of this policy was in your eyes. Like, how does this benefit the duty of the CPD? I think my biggest concern with this is I'm just always hesitant about like intelligence gathering from the state side of things. I wouldn't say it goes as far as like maybe like the Patriot Act does, or even get close to that. I'm just curious, how is this going to benefit our city's police in preventing crime and protecting our citizens?
Well, this policy gives very clear direction for our officers that have a, we're all, like the policy says, we are all, as members of the police department, responsible for gathering information, okay? Some information will rise to another level of what is considered criminal intelligence information. That information, as you well know, and hopefully the community knows, goes a long way in fighting crime, solving cases, and in some instances, preventing crime or preventing horrendous acts from happening. So we have specialized people in the police department that this is their main job, is criminal intelligence, and also to safeguard people's rights. There are very specific rules on how long we can keep that information, when to purge it, and the circumstances regarding the collection, gathering, and storage, and whatnot. So to us, and it's also a CLIA standard, they find it important enough to put in their standards manual. We want to make sure that our practices are up with best practices. And we had a need here, and we filled it with this policy. I don't know if that answers your question, but in the purpose section, A through E comes directly from the standard that CLIA provides.
Yeah. So this kind of just formalizes the process of it. Like it has been happening in the past. This creates a formal process to safeguard people's rights, collect criminal intelligence, share it across relevant agencies, essentially.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay, cool. Another question I had about it was under definitions, it's at the bottom of criminal intelligence. The sentence, information regarding general crime trend patterns and MOs of unknown suspects are not to be considered criminal intelligence information. More of just a general question of why those two aren't considered criminal intelligence information.
Again, we're making a distinction between what criminal intelligence is and basic everyday information.
Okay.
So, for instance, gang affiliations. We have to be very careful if we're going to call someone in our record system a gang member. There is a certain process to go through to substantiate our belief that this person is related to a gang. So, this goes along the safeguards of safeguarding our citizens and taking the necessary precautions to make sure we do things correctly.
Cool. Thank you.
It has to be specific information.
Yeah, it goes through the VCON, right, or something like that to be verified as relevant, I think, just from memory. So it goes up to someone for verification.
There is a verification process. Yes, there is.
Okay.
Correct.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you for explaining that. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. I hope I gave an adequate explanation.
No, you did. You definitely did. And I'm going to remember to clean this off this time.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good questions. Anyone else with questions or concerns about policy 614? All right. The last one then for this evening is policy 804. And this policy deals with our property and evidence. And again, CLIA has multiple standards regarding our policy, how we handle property and evidence. Basically, in the purpose and scope statement here, bullets A through H are identified in those standards. So this is, a policy that had been around for a long time. We've had many changes, many improvements, I would say, over the last several years to our property and evidence function. And our policy really needed not only to be updated to adhere to CLIA standards, but also needed a good, thorough review to make sure that we are following the practices that we have in place today. So one of the good things about CLIA accreditation is that we are required on an annual basis to do a review of all of our policies now to make sure that everything is up to date. So this is one of those things that is not, it's a huge project, and we have people in the department who specialize in these areas. So this is a team effort. I handed this over with a request to our lieutenant and assistant chief in charge of this part of the police operations, as well as the people who work in the property and evidence function to go through this and make sure that they hit all my CLIA points, but also met their needs. And they did a wonderful job providing this pretty extensive policy. So I won't deal, if you look at the marked up version, it would be, it's a mess to try and read because there's that many changes that went into this. But I feel we have a good working product right now. Are there any questions, concerns as you look through our property and evidence policy? You're an easy crowd tonight. Okay. Well, that is the last policy that I had on the agenda for this evening. Anybody has any other questions related to policy or accreditation process? Open for that now. All righty. Well, thank you all for your time. I really appreciate you coming out tonight, and I hope you found it beneficial. Good night.